Welcome back to High Hash Rate. This is episode number 2 out of 3 that we have outstanding, recorded back in October of 2024. I think it was October 13th. And this episode features Ian Rees from the Flirting with Bitcoin podcast. He comes back on. Hope you enjoy the show.
As you know, we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience in the industry. I personally use it to guarantee that I'll always have access to some of my Bitcoin in cold storage whenever I travel. If you want to check out Bitbox O2, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE to get 5% off your purchase or go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE. All one word, no spaces. Check them out. Screw it. Here we go.
So the attention marketplace is that same concept of sats per minute, but you, the individual, are going to set your price for what a minute of your time is worth. And we all as a group pick our own number, we aggregate it out, and we find the market clearing rate of attention for 1 minute. And then that's the number that advertisers can work off of to buy your attention.
Hey, everybody, this is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
Welcome back to High Hash Rate. I believe this episode 114. There's a couple ahead right now that I got to get on top of, but I'm falling behind, so I got to keep pushing out those blocks. But tonight, very exciting night, because we have on a guest that we had on earlier. I can't even remember the episode. It was a few episodes ago.
82.
And that's Ian Rees we have on tonight. So Ian, since our last recording, here's the opening question. Since our last recording, how you been doing, man? What you been up to?
I've been doing good in the general sense of the word. I think we talked about this last time, but I'm a new dad. So
that's right.
Keon's 1.5 and all that entails. So that's been a big part of my how am I doing. No complaints. Great kid. Makes us laugh. Always smiling, always dancing. And part of the reason why I've been spending a lot of time with him is because I quit my job in May. Yeah, May 1st.
Oh, wow.
I won't get into that. Just say I could not take the fiat mines anymore.
Mm.
And
can you just remind us like where you were? Or?
I remember he didn't want to get into that, all that stuff about work and everything, but I just wanted to reiterate, like that was, we talked about it, like we're both software engineers, and like engineering
right.
is
right.
like,
okay.
it's a great job. It's not an easy job to walk away from, especially when you're a new father,
Interesting.
So,
okay.
So yeah. So no, that was like a big,
I just understand
that was
the context,
a big, yeah. yeah, it was a big decision. Are you still feeling good about that one? Or are you nervous? Like, have you gotten over that stage?
I wasn't nervous when it happened, and you know, events have transpired that have led me back to your podcast, which is why I'm probably still not nervous about it.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, like, just getting to spend so much time with Keon is like, I was not expecting that as like part of my reality. You know, like I was expecting that I would be at work, even if I'm working from home, I still have to like go in the basement, right? And so it's not like I'm really like there playing with him. But when I quit, like we have some days where we just like hang out together all day, and it's like my wife's like, "Oh, I'll give you a break. You know, are you tired?" And I'm like, "No, this is great. I love hanging out with Keon." Like, I'll throw him on my shoulders and just walk out the front door, you know?
And yeah, so you really get to experience you have
being
the time,
my reality. But it is, and it's pretty cool.
Did you, before you had your son, did you know that you were going to enjoy fatherhood and just like it was going to be such a natural just part of your life? Like, Did you envision that? Is it a surprise?
Yes and no. So yes, in the sense that if you had asked 21-year-old Ian or 28-year-old Ian, you know, when I was in my 20s, then no, I would not have expected, you know, my reaction. But yeah, like I would say right around the time that I started getting into Bitcoin, I was just going down all these other rabbit holes before I got to Bitcoin. And I started having this feeling of like, I'm learning a lot of stuff. Like I'm learning a lot of things and I want to share them with someone. But my friend circle, who I normally share stuff with, like it kind of had like outgrown them a little bit. And that's when I was like, I want to teach this to someone. Like mm-hmm. I know the truth and I want to pass this truth on.
Mm-hmm.
And Bitcoin is just one of those things of those many rabbit holes that I went down. And so, you know, like the big one for me, I missed it because I've been busy with Nextblock, but, you know, SpaceX and rockets. And, you know, I don't know if you guys watch all the launches, but I try to catch all the launches of the new stuff. And I got to actually hold Keon during like one of the live launches.
Oh, wow.
You know, when they were like testing Starship or whatever. I didn't get to hold them when they were doing the one that caught the freaking rocket out the sky. But but yeah, so like, you know, I was like, I want to teach these things to someone and be like, these are the things you should know, you know, like these are the things that you should like actually focus on and everything else. It's like you can know about it, but it's not important. Like if you don't know it.
Noise, yeah.
And I've just learned so much stuff since coming to Bitcoin. And like I said, before Bitcoin, like I'll say the last 10 years of my life, my actual education of as being a human started 10 years ago is the way I like to like explain it to people sometimes. And so once you actually feel like, in my opinion, that you want to pass knowledge on to someone else, I feel like that's when you would probably have that feeling that I have, which is like, no, this is awesome. Like I'll,
right.
You know, teach
it sounds like, yeah, that. you're describing the decision to start a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. We've all been through it there. Yeah.
But you know, but you know, like, the difference between a human and a podcast is that,
you have to have two humans.
Hopefully outlives you, right? And you know, I guess people hope their podcast outlives them too, I guess. But you hope the human outlives you, and you hope that whatever you're like putting into it, it has a multiplicative effect, right? So it's like they're not going to get something out of it alone. I'm not going to get something out of it alone. We'll get something out of it together, right? And
yes,
like that multiplicativeness of humanity, I feel like, quote unquote, the fiat world kind of suppresses that from us, maybe yeah. intentionally and maybe unintentionally, but just the byproduct of it.
Right. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I've read somebody put it, this was coming from like a more like Christian traditional, philosophy for like raising children. And one of the key points there, which you kind of mentioned, it was like this, like suffering together. So like, if you're going to do something hard, if you're going to make somebody like learn how to change their oil in their car, or they're going to make them learn algebra or whatever it is, whatever lesson you're trying to teach them, like to sit and do it with them and to struggle through that learning process with them and showing them that like, this is an important thing because I'm giving, you know, my time to go through this BS with you. That is, yeah, like that's like a very effective, teaching method and like way to instill values and teach somebody something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember my dad showing me how to do stuff, and like, I didn't want to learn. I didn't want to do it. He's like, come here, you need to do this. And I'm like, why? And now as an adult, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. You know, like, but, yeah. So that like multiplicativeness, that like we're in this together idea, I think Bitcoin just kind of amplifies that feeling. I don't think you need Bitcoin to have that feeling, but I think Bitcoin really amplifies it when, you know, I was having this debate with this person one time, and I was like, humans' brains are not exponential, right? We cannot think in terms of exponential ideas. But Bitcoin kind of unlocks that for you a little bit, right? Like your Bitcoin, and once you understand what it is and you understand it enough to see how that exponential curve might play out in your benefit, then it actually enables you to see what exponential returns can look like. And that gets you back into what humanity is about, which is like, we get 1% better every year as a group. Come on. Right? Like, we got to do that 1% every year. We can't have someone dragging weight holding us down.
Right.
And so I think with Bitcoin, it's a technology to unlock that ability to see exponential growth in things.
Right. Exactly.
And once you can see it, then you can start applying that new tool to your problem set. And maybe some of your problems are they need that exponential tool to work, and you won't be there to see it, but you can set plans in motion that say, in three generations, we'll have done X, Y, or Z. And yeah, so I started thinking like that a little bit before Bitcoin when I was learning some other cool stuff, but then Bitcoin just like sealed it up. It was like, all right, like, we're going to be good, and I got to teach you how to manage this.
That's what? Go ahead, Mike.
Can I just hop in? You know, you pointed out something really, really interesting to me, which was you trying to teach a child something and they don't want to learn it. This is an interesting dynamic, because you as an adult, as you said, understand the reasons why the father, you know, wants to teach. Because you know, if you had all these, that knowledge at this, you know, you would be able to carry it on, keep going. And I didn't have to do this for nothing. Like take what I have and go. But they're so resistant to this. It's like a part of their being is to be like resistant to the things that you're trying to teach them. It's such an interesting conflict.
I think there's other, in terms of how do you
even apply that? This is what I made me think of. Well, it's like, how do you apply that to Bitcoin? That's what I'm trying to ask.
I want to pass
on your knowledge about Bitcoin.
I think that it goes back to what we were saying about the struggle, about the let's do this together, right? Think about trying to teach a child, like trying to orange pill somebody. It's like you can't just tell them to do it. You can't tell them to buy Bitcoin, right? Like, they're not going to do it, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people get frustrated because they're like telling them, like, listen, like all those smart people on TV, every billionaire agrees with me. You have to do this. Fiat is worthless. And people are like, okay, I'm not doing it. But if you kind of do it with them, like you teach them how to use Bitcoin, you teach them how to set up a node, and you're like, you're going through the process together, and you're spending time to help them learn about it. Like, think about the results and the difference in the results. So it's like, if you're a new father and you're not a very good orange piller, you got to work on your orange pilling, or your kid's going to be fucked up.
Exactly. And, you know,
he's going to be a shit coiner. He's going to grow up to be a fiat shit coiner. And that's what you don't want. Because he's going to be like, you know.
Yeah, it's one of the things we talk about on the podcast is this idea of like the Bitcoin aristocracy, right? And, you know, people have a negative connotation with that. But all aristocracy is after like the, you know, inordinate amount of wealth part of it, is just a code of conduct, but like how you behave yourself and manage your affairs. And you can't be part of the aristocracy if you're a shit coiner, right? Like, it doesn't work. We live in a world now where the aristocracy are the shit coiners, right? And we're trying to correct that problem. But fundamentally, like, if you have actual wealth that you want to pass on, the person that you're passing it on to has to know how to manage it. The fiat world has convinced us that, like, no, you just put it in a trust and they're good. And it's like, no, you might get one or two generations of that passed down and then it's gone. If you don't teach the people how to actually like have it,
right,
it doesn't matter if you give it to them or not. And so
it's right in the name, a trust. Yeah. You're not supposed to trust banks.
So
nice.
But this is these are the things that, like, now with Keon, I think about a lot. And it's funny, like I think I'm like 4 years ahead of my wife on this thinking. I think she is just now getting to the point where she's seeing things the way that I see them, And now she's like vocalizing it every once in a while.
How many episodes of flirting with Bitcoin did it take before you got her to this point where she's finally like,
well,
she's finally orange pilled.
This is a good tie-in to the topic of tonight, which is, it's not out yet. It's our episode that's about to go out. But the last recording we did is, I literally, when we stopped recording, I said to her, I was like, you became a podcaster tonight.
Oh, shit, dude.
And she was like, why do you say that? And I was like, you have been playing this role of like, I don't know anything about Bitcoin, or I don't know the topic, and you're like explaining it to me or whatever. And you've known more and more and more and more while you're still playing that role. But now when we're talking about next block, I was like, you're the subject matter expert on this. And you have to talk how you know about Bitcoin and how you know about Noster to be able to talk coherently about next block. So you can't pretend like you don't know anymore. And the way that she's like, the way that the episode sounds, because I do like a first rough cut before we send it off to our producer. I was listening to it being like, yeah, this is good. Like, you know, like as I'm like cutting it, I'm like, this is good. And so like she's, you know, we're in season 4 now of the podcast episode, like over 100 episodes. And yeah, like she's definitely successfully orange pilled. But
damn. So like this was like in Karate Kid when he does like the mantis and he does the kick and knocks the dude out. And you're like Mr. Miyagi and you're sitting back and you're like, the podcaster, has arrived. Like
nice,
he is
nice
ready.
Visual.
She is ready. She is ready.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And the fact that we're talking about this company that on the podcast we talked about maybe once or 3-4 times maybe over the past year, but we've been talking about this on the couch for the past year. So it's gone through a lot of iterations. It's gone through a lot of like debate of how would that appear to the world, let alone how would that even work. And, you know, there was a lot of complaints coming up on Noster about Noster over the summer, and Mandana wrote this post on Noster addressing those complaints. And it wasn't until I read that I was like, okay, all your whole point's valid, and let's make what you just said. Because like we had half of the idea already, but her post became like the other half of the idea. And that's kind of how a lot of our stuff has worked out, where it's like, it's one of us brings half of the solution. So at NextBlock, you know, if I could just plug it real quick.
Please. Yes. Taking too long to get to it.
Yeah, I know. I feel like we teased people. So at NextBlock, we are a new social media company that pays the people to watch ads. That is the easiest pitch I can make without talking about any underlying technology or anything like that.
Right. So this is what I think is interesting. Most people are used to, you watch TV, you watch shows, you watch content, and that's like how you get the advertisers get you to watch their ads. But you're flipping that. You're making the advertisers pay you. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to make the advertisers pay me. I'm sick of being, this is not value for value.
Well, you sort of realize what
Netflix
attention
sucks.
Is worth.
This shit sucks, yeah.
That's what attention is. You finally understand, your attention is worth something.
Okay, yeah. But
the incentive is so there.
Yeah, we got to let them tell us about this, though.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So, this idea of advertisers paying you to watch their ads basically came from our being podcasters and using Fountain, right? So Fountain lets you buy ads on Fountain. And when you click on one of those sponsored ads, basically you're watching something that they paid you to watch, and then they're going to give you some Bitcoin to watch it. And I thought this was a really cool idea. We bought ads for our podcast, but I wasn't able to get like actionable information that I wanted. It gives you some basic stats, and they've added some more since I started thinking about this idea. But the thing that interests me the most was when you buy the ad, you set how much you're willing to pay. So I'm willing to pay you 100 sats to listen to a 60-minute episode of my podcast, right? Well, if someone offers you 100 sats to listen to a 30-minute podcast, that's actually a different amount of money. And so I was having these conversations with the Fountain guys, and I was trying to tease out, like, should I be offering more sats? Is it based on time? You know, like, what determines my ad showing up before someone else's? And they didn't really have an answer at the time, so I'm not, like, really complaining about Fountain or anything. It's just that it was that curiosity that I had that I came up with this idea of sats per minute, right? So that's, like, the origin of this idea is, like, I just want to know how valuable a minute of content is.
Okay. This right? is... Yeah, this is...
That's big. I got something there, but okay.
And so as a podcaster, I was thinking, oh, it'd be really cool if, like, you know, it was like Fountain, but when someone boosted the episode, like where they boosted would, like, help me find the, like, good parts of my content, literally based on money, right? And then if people clipped that same section and then the clips got boost, like, you just stack all of these sats on individual slices of minutes, and in theory you'd be able to find the most valuable slash interesting part of the podcast if you could do that in a very easy and simple way. And so I started sketching out, like, how I was going to do this podcasting app to do this. And while I was doing that, I basically pulled out what we're now calling in Next Block the attention marketplace, right? So the attention marketplace is that same concept of sats per minute, but you, the individual, are going to set your price for what a minute of your time is worth. And we all as a group pick our own number, we aggregate it out, and we find the market clearing rate of attention for 1 minute. And then that's the number that advertisers can work off of to buy your attention. If they want to buy more attention, they'll pay higher rates and they'll get more people who price their attention higher.
Right.
If they want to save money, they'll price their, they'll buy lower rates and they'll get lower attention. So we had this idea, and then we were trying to figure out, like, what do we do with this? Like, how do we make this a thing? And we tried a couple angles that I won't get into because they're not important, but we were trying a lot of angles on Noster. And like I said, over the summer, people started complaining about a lot of Noster UX, UI. And then Mondo wrote this post basically saying how she thought the Noster experience should be. And I was like, well, cool. If we do that, and then we shove the attention marketplace into that, we now have a social media company that, oh my God. And then we just started, like, we were on the couch just going back and forth. And then we could do this. 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 And then we don't have to ask for this. And then we don't have to do this. And it was like, wait, are we really starting a social media company? Especially, like, in the climate that the world is in right now. But we believe that what we are offering is necessary in the social media landscape to help people break out of the addiction machine that the current social media has produced.
Yeah.
And the first way to help them break out of that is to literally entice them with money, saying, I will pay you to leave Instagram. I will pay you to leave TikTok if you just come spend roughly 10 minutes of your time over here, right? Like, that's literally the raw value prop that we're making to anyone that will hear about Next Block in the future is, can I buy 10 minutes of your time to just try this app out? At the end, you watch some ads, you get paid. If you like it, you stay. If you don't like it, go back to what you were doing. And the hope is that that experience will be so raw and so different that they will start questioning their current experience that they're having on literally every other social media app. And then they will see them for what they actually are, which are a bunch of corporations who harvest attention on social media, people that we've dubbed the chaos cartel. So don't let them trick you into saying TikTok is different from Instagram, is different from Facebook. They're all doing the same business model. They are all part of a cartel, and they are all harvesting and selling our attention, because they're not selling ads. They're selling access to our eyeballs and our time. That's what they're actually selling. That's our property, not theirs. And they're literally selling, they're selling something they don't own all the time, every day. They make $500 billion doing it. And that $500 billion, I believe, belongs to everyone who makes their products valuable. Maybe not all of it, right? But maybe like 400 billion of it. I don't know. Like maybe 450 billion of it. I don't know, right? Like, do you need the full 500 billion? Because Gmail's for free is not covering $500 billion. I'm sorry.
They're manipulating people and generating very emotional reactions and kind of instigating, you know, conflict between communities, between neighbors, all not because they have like this, you know, this malicious agenda. Some people like kind of liken it to a conspiracy theory where they're trying to divide us, but it's not even that. It's less, it's more cynical than that. It's, they're just trying to use it to get clicks on ads and to sell your attention, to monetize your attention. The more they can get you riled up and taking the crazy stuff and like checking the timeline, the more they can monetize your attention. And that is not, who is that serving? Not us, for sure.
Yeah.
Can I just say something you pointed, that this whole thing pointed out to me, is that your product, NextBlock, it actually, it shows me how Bitcoin can or does, or finally allows humans to give value to time. It has this like, to their own time, like more accurately understanding what.
Right. They can see like what the sats per V byte of the, you know, a moment of their time is right now.
Because that could hour be that could, of my that, time is worth.
Because that would fluctuate, you know, too. But that fluctuates too, right?
Like absolutely.
Might, right. Absolutely. So like a half hour of time might be cheaper one day than the other.
One of the things that, I mean, I've had so many like aha moments, like once we kind of started, well, when I first started with the attention marketplace, you can now price your time, sure, but when you're using NextBlock, or if you're using a social media company instead of NextBlock, there is now an opportunity cost, right? So up until the existence of NextBlock and this business model, you just go, I got to pick the least worst option amongst them. But I'm not losing anything. Now, if you're spending your time somewhere that's not paying you, but is providing you the same service, you're actually losing. I think that people are not stupid. And I think that people will at least make that value judgment correctly. Now, we got to obviously do our job and get the experience and the feature set friendly in a way that encourages people to use it, which we can talk about the feature set in a second. But actually having that number allows people to realize when their time is being wasted, because now there is literally a place that is telling you, you know, every 10 minutes, we're going to sell you, you know, a minute of your time. Like, your brain could do that math a lot faster than you realize. And when someone's wasting your time, your brain will literally be like, I, at worst, I could be watching ads and making money, right?
Right.
At worst, you're not giving me anything, right?
Excuse me, I have to go watch it.
Like anchoring your time to something that, like, actually being anchored to something is something that humans, just like with the exponential thing, Bitcoin is giving us this new tool set to make rational, logical decisions. And I believe that, and Mandana, which, you know, again, this is her idea, that there are people that are already doing that. You know, one of the things that's interesting about the Bitcoin community, and specifically the Noster community, that I've learned since we've started talking about NextBlock a lot, is nobody uses TikTok. And they think TikTok is an anathema or whatever. They have very negative connotation toward TikTok. And that's fair and fine. But it is the dominant social media product and experience. And so what I've learned in talking about this is, if you go to TikTok, there are actually people on TikTok specifically trying to escape the Western algorithms. They're trying to escape a certain algorithm that has given them a worldview that they disagree with, and they feel like the TikTok algorithm is a better representation of the world. If we can just give those same people an even better option, they will go to that as well. And that's the real goal of what NextBlock is trying to do. It's trying to convince those people, those social media refugees or whatever you want to call them, that no, you should keep moving and move over here to this place that has no algorithm, because nobody's going to create an algorithm that works for everyone. NextBlock has no algorithm. That's
how does that, work? How does that work?
How does no algorithm?
Yeah. What does that mean? I don't even know what that means.
I'm trying to think like what he said had made me have this realization. He said people trying to escape, you know, the Western algorithm or like, is the specific algorithm. And it's, yeah, you put it, when you said Western, that's when it kind of did it for me. It's like, it's almost like some people might feel they are in East Berlin. Like that's their algorithm. Mm. Like they're stuck in this, they're stuck in the communist Twitter algorithm. Right. And like their thinking, their way of valuing time, their way of thinking about their future, their way of thinking about themselves, that is all totally affected by their algorithm. And if they're stuck in a like a really bad algorithm, right, it's almost like a feedback loop in your mind. If you start thinking depressing thoughts and you just create these patterns of depressing thoughts, like boom, now you are depressed. You have built this pattern of thinking that you're stuck in, and it's like there's layers to that. And the algorithm that you're using on the internet is very much affecting your life if you're online a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember an internet before algorithms, right? And one of the things that I think is going to be very interesting about NextBlock is that it's going to remind people a lot of MySpace and not necessarily the next cool algorithm like TikTok, right? And again, you know, when I was super young, when I was in high school saying that I wanted to have a software company, I used to always have this joke. It's like, I don't want the whole internet. I just want 1%, right? Like anyone who wants the whole internet is crazy, but 1% of the internet, like I'll do good with that. So I don't want all of social media. I would love if everyone who loves social media would decide to use NextBlock, but I don't think that's going to be the case. And I'm willing to accept that 1% might be the upper limit, but that 1%, I would argue, is probably the same 1% of people on the planet that get Bitcoin early.
Yeah.
Or the 1% of the planet that's going to get Nostr early, right? And so if this is the social media for that 1%, so be it. But there will always be an alternative out there for everyone else, and they can never say that they don't have an alternative to the algorithm that they don't like, right? Like you can't say you don't have an alternative anymore.
If you think about it, like the citadels, you know, think of the algorithms like citadels, like your little Nostr citadel, your group chat, your fucking little niche, like
citadels. I mean, algorithms are your reality, right? Mm-hmm. Like we talk about them purely in computer terms, but religion is an algorithm. Government is an algorithm. All these things are algorithms that, you know, kind of influence how you see the world. And not all algorithms are bad, right? Within that definition of algorithms. But
I think most importantly, the algorithms affect how you make decisions. They affect the decisions you make. And the decisions you make can lead to the actions that you actually. So these algorithms, just like, you know, Bitcoin is, you know, runs off a mining algorithm, but it, you know, the second order effects of following this algorithm lead to a lot of energy being used, you know, all over the world, data centers. They're buying nuclear plants and shit. It can have a very big impact. Yeah, for sure. And it's, so I'm wondering when you think about it through this lens, when you think about it, like religions or algorithms, cultures, things like that, you start to think like, what's the user experience like? What's my life going to be like using your algorithm?
Yep.
So I think about the algorithms that I'm stuck in right now that I should probably be shopping around for algorithms. But I wake up in the morning and I open my phone and I check like my notifications, and I'm, you know, shortly I'm on Twitter and I'm scrolling because I'm seeing the news, I'm seeing all the crazy political controversies, all the big scoops, all the, you know, the cutting to what's going on in the Middle East, what's going, who are we bombing now, everything, right? There's just so much information. So that's my user experience. Like, that's how I start my day. If you were somebody who was using Nextblock, like, what are we doing? Are we, it was like, instead it's like, I'm going to go online and watch, you know, because
that is,
you know,
a an ad can, way
an ad can be anything, right? Yeah. Okay.
That was beautiful. Okay. That was a beautiful segue.
Good landing.
One of the big things about Nextblock, and I got really excited about this part of it, is that I feel like a lot of things that I've been like watching on YouTube for a while, I got to pull these ideas into this idea of Nextblock as well. And one of them is the Superblocks project in Barcelona. I don't know if you're aware of this, but basically Barcelona looks like this big grid, and they cordoned off like 3x3 squares of that grid and restricted car access to go through the grid. So you ended up with these like big green spaces in the middle of the city because it's just pedestrians and, you know, kids could play basically in the streets and stuff like that. Car pollution went down, noise pollution went down. It just like created the city more livable, a more livable city for like the residents of Barcelona. And they had done this in a city further north. But the project ran out of money, but it did really well. And so the country of Spain kind of adopted it and brought it to Barcelona. And so I always just thought that project was interesting. And I don't know if you noticed, but the logo for Nextblock, this is actually what a Barcelona Superblock intersection looks like, right?
Mm.
And so our whole idea about Nextblock is taking that idea that you can solve these urban problems, with like thoughtful design, right? And so we're trying to bring thoughtful design to social media by solving internet problems with like real world solutions. And one of the biggest real world solutions we can bring is that, well, by default, you don't know everything that's going on and you don't have access to everything that's going on. So whereas most social media companies and their platforms are blacklist or denial, like you block people or you mute people, Nextblock is access granted. So by default, no one has access to your attention. And then through your actions using Nextblock, you grant people different levels of access to your attention. And we've called those levels of access, we're using real terms instead of internet made up terms like followers and friends. And we're not friends, we're just a record in a database. We're using real terms, and
it's a relationship. It's a data relationship.
Yeah, it's an entity relationship.
Is that what this is, Dan? A data relationship.
And so the way that we're modeling our social graph and how it works and what you see is you grant access to your attention, right? So we talked about one way that you grant access, which is that you sell access, right? You sell access to your attention. But you can be benevolent and you can grant access to your attention by basically placing people in different categories, right? So the four categories that we have are strangers, contacts, neighbors, and next door neighbors, right? And so we like to tell a story when we're more in a public setting, just chatting with people, that it doesn't matter if it's in the real world or on the internet, everyone is a stranger until you first meet. So that's a one-to-one mapping. Then, you know, you may or may not exchange information with someone that you just met and they're just the contact, right? Like you don't know anything about them, but you want to get in touch with them later. But you might see them at a party and you'll recognize their face and you'd be like, oh, did I get your number? And you push the number in your phone and you're like, oh, I already have it.
That's read only. They don't have right permissions to your attention.
Right, right. And then, you know, you've known this contact for a while and you're like, well, I actually want to include this person in my extended daily activity of social media usage. So you would add them to your neighborhood. And then if it's a very close relationship, like Mike and Dan here, you guys would be next door neighbors and you would add them to your block, right?
I'll never be his fucking next door neighbor ever.
Well, you may or may not. But the point is that at each level of those, like at each level that I just described, There's this corresponding section in the application in NextBlock, right? So you're a stranger, and we have a section called the Wilds, right? And the Wilds is the entire Noster ecosystem and the feed. Now, for the technical people that are going to be using this to begin with, that's how we'll explain it to them. But for the average user who doesn't know anything about Noster and hopefully never has to know anything about Noster or Bitcoin, that is the Wilds. That is everything, right?
Yeah.
But you meet some contacts out there or whatever, and then you come into the next location, which is the city. So cities and contacts, right? You bump into contacts in the city. And if and when you come across their content and they are a contact, we'll do like a profile image or color code idea to show you that this is a contact that you know, to indicate that it's, you know, it's content from someone like that. Then again, your neighborhood, which is actually the coolest feature of NextBlock, which I want to talk to you guys about a lot. Your neighborhood and your block function exactly the same. The only difference is that your block is capped at 21 people. So it's a false constraint, right? And it's a Bitcoin, right? But it's a false constraint so that we can have this separation of knowing exactly who, if you could only see content from these people, who would they be? And then if you, after you exhaust all of that, or you just want to skip over it, you go to your main activity of the app, which would be your neighborhood, right? And your neighborhood is where it's uncapped, and you would now add any and everyone that in legacy social media you would call a follower or a friend. The only difference is that when you're on your block or in your neighborhood, you only see things from people that you've added to your block or your neighborhood. So if you post something, you're only going to see replies from your friends. You're only going to see comments from people that you've added to your neighborhood. That doesn't mean the other comments aren't happening because of intrinsically how Noster works. But the default view is that only those people that you've added to your neighborhood or your block have access to your attention. Everyone else, you have to make a conscious decision to toggle to see their content. And then if it's a bunch of mean tweets or whatever, you just turn it back off.
So this, I really love this idea. Like this, the way you're describing this user experience. And what I'm thinking about is that with so much social media, so much data that's been, so many apps that have been built, so many relationships, so many communications, like we have, we've basically created these entity relationships, and we've seen that human interactions, social interactions, like we've seen it in the data, and we know now how to store it or like how to navigate it, because it's almost like the way that you're setting up these access points in your app, it's almost like a cybersecurity model. Like you're setting permissions, you're setting read write access, you're limiting like the scope of what users can have access, or that can access your data or their data, vice versa. And it starts to make it, what's one of the biggest problems people have in real life, like personal relationships? It's like a lot of people have problems setting boundaries. It's because they don't know how to think about setting boundaries. But when you put it in this, like, if would I add this person on Facebook? Would I, you know, add them to my, you know, my close friends on Instagram? So only my close friends can see my story. Or like, would it be like a stranger, an anonymous person who could be anywhere in the world, like on Twitter? And you can kind of like start to actually structure it in a way that you structure your everyday life. It's like we mapped how to start to set our boundaries and how to navigate and how to think about, I'm sharing this intimate personal information, this would only be with my household or maybe my block, and if I think about it that way, I wouldn't be posting crazy stuff on Twitter about my personal meltdowns.
So there's a very key point here that I have to always make sure is clear with people, is that the thing that you're granting access to is your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that you post is public. There's no such thing as privacy on NextBlock or Noster. Right?
Okay.
So you're not excluding people from seeing what you've posted. but they can exclude seeing what you posted if they choose to, right?
Okay. By default, yeah, yeah. There, yeah.
Default, they don't see what you posted, but if they want to, it is there for them to see. There's, you could, they could, you know, they can block you to not see your stuff, but they can always choose to unblock you. Like, you're not in control of anybody else. It's very Bitcoin-esque.
Yes, sure, right? Sure.
Right. Nobody's in control. But here's a couple cool, you know, with this model, there's one cool thing that we can do, and it's actually, you know, part of the reason why I think Madhana and I kind of jumped on this idea is Madhana and I have very different internets, right? We have very different internet experiences, and that's part of the reason why when she wrote that post, I was also unaware of what she was saying, right? But I believe her because I see her use TikTok and I see her do these things, and so obviously that's her experience, and she's always showing me stuff. But you can't actually show someone your internet, right? Like, you can't show someone your algorithm. You have to hand them your phone, or you have to, you know, give them your login credentials. That's the only way that you can have a shared reality with anyone, right? Again, because this algorithm controls our reality and it controls the decisions that we're making. So maybe if we were seeing the same things, we would make the same decisions, but that's not what's happening, right? So in NextBlock, you can visit people's neighborhoods.
Oh, shit.
Right? So
hell yeah.
So you, Dan, have your neighborhood and you've added a bunch of people, right? And I'm not one of them, but Mike is, right? Well, I can go to your neighborhood and Mike can go to your neighborhood. But if I comment on something in your neighborhood, nobody's going to see it.
Yeah. Okay.
If Mike comments on something in your neighborhood, Mike's part of your neighborhood. He's allowed to be part of the discussion in your neighborhood. You just got to lurk.
You can't be, you can't contribute.
But here's the cool thing is that now that I can visit your neighborhood, I'm seeing exactly what you see. It is a real time feed. It is a time sequential feed. There's no algorithm. So everything that's available for you to see and Mike to see is also available for me to see. So one of the big things that, one of the big comments that people were making over the summer was about the Noster onboarding experience, right? You come on to Noster, it's like, oh, you got to follow more people or join more relays, yada, yada, yada. That's fine. And it's, and that's a valid answer. But on NextBlock, you would actually just go to someone's neighborhood and just kind of have their experience for a while, right?
Right.
So, and then maybe from there, you find someone else, and you're like, oh, I'm going to check out their neighborhood, and you'll kind of ping back and forth until you find a good neighborhood, and then you'll start plucking people and contacts and neighbors and friends from that experience, not having to do it cold turkey.
What about, like, would you have the ability to say, I'd say, hey, Mike, I'm going to share with you my algorithm for, you know, permanently or maybe for a temporary amount of time. So Mike could click that and he could visit, he could start to view everything. He would not have be able to interact with it, but he'd be able to view all the content like through my algorithm. You know, somebody's like, don't judge somebody.
No algorithm.
Or like, oh, that's right. Cause you have to,
it's
like,
just the timeline. It's just a timeline.
The timeline, the timeline, the timeline. Yeah.
So, I mean, the short answer is you can already do this in a roundabout way.
Sure.
On Noster, the protocol itself. But what NextBlock is trying to do is just make it a common experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was saying this tonight to Madhana, it's that we don't actually have profile pages in NextBlock. Your profile page is your neighborhood. Like, you are your neighborhood. And the reason why that's important is that we don't have to deal with bots as a company. If there's a bot in your neighborhood, you can take it out.
You gotta have like bot patrols.
Bot patrols or whatever, but
no,
since
but
but that's, since it's a revoke first, you shouldn't see anything.
Right.
So if you see a bot, it's because you added a bot into your neighborhood. So kick it out. Also, if you're just kind of curate a certain type of vibe for your neighborhood, because maybe you just are a content creator or something like that, you want to create a specific look and feel of your neighborhood. And that work that you're doing, we think should be rewarded. And so one of the cool things is that with neighborhoods, if you watch an ad while you're visiting someone's neighborhood, that neighborhood gets a cut of your payout because it's their work and content curation that is keeping you on the platform. And my thesis is that not everyone's going to curate their own neighborhood. Most people are going to go find a neighborhood that they like and just hang out there.
Right.
But the problem with that is, because Nextblock is a, not even a problem, the opportunity with that is, you know, with Nextblock, we're targeting basically the global South with this idea. We're targeting everyone, but the global South in particular, because of two reasons. Number one, I was in Amsterdam last week for the BTC Amsterdam conference, and I got to speak with the woman who's running for president of Suriname, Maya.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen her on Twitter. Yeah,
I forget her last name.
I'll try to find it.
I was explaining Nextblock to her, and she raised an issue that, I mean, I knew, but I had never really thought about, which is, if you're anywhere in the world and you want to promote something on the internet, you have to run the money through like a Western entity. Google, Meta, the advertising companies, all that stuff kind of mostly exists in what the global South calls the West, right? And she was like, so how does Nextblock solve that problem? And I was like, oh, well, in theory, if what exists in my head existed today, then you could just spin up previous block in Suriname, right? And you could sell ads to whoever you want to sell ads to, and you can put ads into your little app called Previous Block, and everyone could just use Previous Block. Nextblock could pull ads from Previous Block if it wanted to, right? But we don't have to have that relationship. We don't have to share data, but we probably would want to share ads with as many people as kind of sell ads that we agree with. But that form of, and I was thinking about like the term to call this, like marketing mercantilism, or, you know, something like that, where like you can't get a message out to the world unless the money goes through a centralized location. Like that's mercantilism for information, right? But with Nextblock, we don't have control like that. We plan to build the intention marketplace completely open source that anyone will be able to build on it or plug into it or spin up their own version of it. We hope that we would all just kind of work together, right? But we're trying to build technology where someone else could spin up Nextblock tomorrow a lot easier than it's going to be for us to spin up Nextblock. And we think that by decentralizing the attention marketplace, we will actually get a more real, justifiable price of attention on the global marketplace. But by all means, please put all your ad money through Nextblock.
Right.
You know, like we will obviously not sell ads to certain people. Like we will not put crypto ads into the network, but someone else probably will. And that's okay. We just won't show them.
I did have a question on this. I just wanted to get to is like, what stage are you at? What stage are you guys at with Nextblock? Like,
so honestly,
where are you at the project?
So honestly, we're at the give me some basic UI specs so I can go build this stage. We went to Amsterdam as like a initial release of like, hey, would you guys even be interested in something like this? Because Noster and the word ads seem to be very, they don't seem to go together. And I also figured that the Dutch are very pragmatic, but straightforward people. So if it sucked, they would say it very politely, but they would be like, that's not going to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we just got a ton of great feedback in Amsterdam. So we really accelerated everything.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go to El Salvador for adopting Bitcoin. There's going to be a Noster event the day before there. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about Nextblock there, maybe do another presentation of some sort. But really just trying to get the community centered around this idea of like, hey, if this existed, would you guys use it? Because we're building it, but we'll stop if you say no. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to build it if you say no. But it's been nothing but positive feedback, even from the people that I thought would be the harshest critics. So
have you started building some like simple MVP like okay. It's like, I'm thinking as an advertiser, or as somebody who's trying to buy people's attention, or you know, purchase a moment of their time, how like what constitutes an ad? Like, are they going to be scrolling through, you know, like, watch this ad, that's worth this much? Or is it like, if you just want to tweet, if you just want to post, it's like, that's one sat for them to see that.
So you don't have to have ads at all. You can turn that completely off. But also, ads only show or are shown when there's a new Bitcoin block. So we are tying ad frequency to the Bitcoin protocol.
Interesting.
Which means we don't decide when you see ads. Literally, the Bitcoin network is making that decision. And on average, it'll be every 10 minutes, but maybe sometimes it's an hour. Who knows? I don't know. But the idea behind that is, again, like trying to create an incentive structure where no one will come in and try to monopolize it or exploit it. They'll just want to participate. And so one of the things that I've been knocking around in my head, was, which will probably be one of the first pieces of tech that we build after the basic client of Nextblock, is an embeddable widget in web pages. Right. So right now we're just talking about showing ads in the Nextblock app itself, but the attention marketplace and the ad network itself could technically be displayed anywhere. So if we offer websites the ability to like switch out Google, put us in instead, you're already showing ads, so that's fine, whatever. We'll switch out, or at least, you know, give them the option that if they have a Noster extension, you'll display this ad and put their Noster public key in, and we'll pull the ad into that, and they could possibly earn some money that way, right? Oh, and by the way, since you're the one who made the impression, you get a payout from that as well, right? So like, you're not losing money per se, and you're going to actually be garnering goodwill with the people who, in theory, if this Bitcoin thing plays out, will be the ones with the money to buy your products that you're advertising, right? So, and also, by the way, when people get paid for learning about your product, they have a better like relationship with your product on day one. So, but embeddable widgets on websites, I think, is the first thing that we'll build after the actual like Noster, the client itself. And I think that would really show the power of the attention marketplace as a whole. And we'll get a lot of people, how do I do this? Or how do I earn money when I'm just on any website now, not just in this app called Nextblock, right? Because what we're building is an ad network. Nextblock is just an app to show those ads, because all the other Noster client developers, for lack of a better term, would be ostracized if they were the first ones to put in ads. So we felt like we had to make our own thing, be the first one with ads, and then make it very easy for all other clients to integrate if they want to. But just like with Bitcoin, since we're kind of starting it, if we could establish that the frequency is tied to the Bitcoin blockchain, if you connect to our ad server to pull ads into your app, that's what you're going to get. Someone else can have a different frequency, and that's fine, but we would hope that people would stay in the spirit of, well, if we're going to be paying you in Bitcoin, let's keep it tied to Bitcoin.
For sure.
And one of the, just to tie a bow on that, that idea is, one of the interesting ways to think about what the attention marketplace really is that it's Bitcoin mining for people without the need for understanding hardware, mm-hmm. right? Like, you also mm-hmm. get paid out every 10 minutes if you're using this ad network. So you don't have to run, I have my what is this called, BitAx right here. Even that's too much of an investment for some people, but you could just get on Nextblock and earn a couple sats every 10 minutes, right? And now you're part of the Bitcoin economy. On Nextblock, there's no likes, so the only way you can signal is with a zap, so you can participate in that right away. And one of the goals of Nextblock is to make sure that all of that lightning and Bitcoin and all that stuff is obfuscated away to the average user, so that they don't have to worry about how do I connect this or how do I do that. We're going for the same lightning experience as Primal, right? Where it's just kind of baked into the client and you don't know that it's really using APIs and going to Strike. You just get to zap and receive Bitcoin and see a balance.
It almost makes you want to like take a portion of the sats that could be paid out, you know, every 10 minutes on average. And like whoever earns the most sats during any given block period, they get that coin base, so to speak. Sats base. Encourage them to just be on there fucking earning.
Yeah, so we are trying to go the opposite direction. you know, we're actually creating, Mondano was creating some stuff before I came down here for some marketing on the website, talking about rehab and talking about social media rehab and talking about all the ways that this has gone down over time. And, you know, it's okay if you have a problem with it, but the first step is like admitting that, like literally rehab. And next block is you can't go cold turkey, but you got to swap out something that's not as deadly to you. And so we believe that the feature set and the incentive structure of Next Block is a good rehab out and away from social media. And we have to have these incentives that when you do get that fiend to go on social media, you go to this place that's not designed to keep you there the entire time.
Yeah, it's like vaping compared to cigarettes. It's like you can't completely quit, but at least you can chill out, you know?
Yeah.
Be healthier for your attention span, your mind. Less toxic.
The idea is just, you know, I said this the other night, like it keeps getting bigger the more we talk about it. But the general idea of there's this cartel of social media companies that has literally run roughshod over us the last 15 years. I think that people are ready to fight back. And if the only thing we have to do is opt out to fight back, like we could teach them how to opt out, right? Like it's a lot easier to opt out of your social media than it is to opt out of your money, right?
Right.
But once you opt out of social media into this other option, then from that vantage point, from that different vantage point, you can look back on everything that you accepted. And part of what you accepted in that other reality is the business model of it all. And the business model of it all is predicated on fiat money. So like you can't buy ads on Google with Bitcoin.
Right.
You can't even zap people on Domus on Apple. So like that world, like once you have Bitcoin in your pocket and they say you can't send it places, I'm suspect of those parts of the world now. Because they gave this to me. It's worth something. Like someone gave it to me. And I just think that it's a interesting way to pull people with us on this Bitcoin journey that we're on without even really telling them that that's what we're doing. Right. Like part of the goal of Next Block is to not use the word Noster or Bitcoin. Right. Now it happens to have an N and a B. That's part of the joke. Right. But we don't want to say the word Noster and we don't want to say the word Bitcoin unless we absolutely have to. Right. Like unless someone says, how did you do that? That, why can't I do that over there? Then we have to say Noster or Bitcoin. Otherwise, Next Block's just a social media app that pays you to watch ads. You want to get paid
I really think, you know, I want to applaud you on the name. I think it's a great name, especially, you know, all the things it sort of points out, speaking to the sort of Bitcoin ethos. It reminds me of, you know, you could just block ads. So it just makes me think of like, you know, the next block, you know, like just the next ad block. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting.
There's a lot of layers to it. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, and then we can do this, and then we could do this. But no, to your original question about where are we building it, I want to leave you guys with this actually, an idea that I'm calling consensus-driven development. And the idea is that it's a modified hackathon. So we would have what we want to build, and we'd have a resume of sorts, right? Like this would be the ideal candidate. And we source four candidates. And we say, okay, here's the proposal. We're not going to source four candidates and then give each one of you a feature to build. We're going to source four candidates, and then we're all going to build the same feature. and we're all going to sit down and we're all going to look at everyone's implementation. And then the four of you are going to vote. And whoever wins the vote of having the best implementation, we merge their code into the code base. You get paid the bounty like it was a hackathon, but everyone else gets paid because they contributed at least some brain power to agreeing right. that that was the best implementation, right? And so that's the process that we want to go through to build out the POC of a very bare bones Noster client that has the attention marketplace built into it. And the idea behind that is, yes, it will take us a little bit longer, right, to build like that. And in theory, you know, on that triangle, what is it, cheap, good, and fast? We're just not picking fast, right? So it'll be a little bit cheaper because we're going to do it in a hackathon model. But it will be good, right? And the product of that, we end up with a bunch of artifacts from that process. So the first artifact that we have is we literally documented the entire build out of open source software, because for every feature, there will be a pre-discussion of what it is and what we need to build. And there'll be some discussion and there'll be a video or record it. Everyone brings their potential implementation. So there's four commits that could possibly get merged. We have another video recording of discussion, voting, and all that fun stuff. And then we merge the code in. And so you basically build out the entire thought process of how this project was built out. And you also have four people that now know how the attention marketplace works, and they can take that code, fork off, and go do their own thing that they've been thinking about while they were working on that. Maybe they can get hired by some other company to help them implement the attention marketplace in their products. Maybe we hire them, right? Like, we probably will hire at least one person from that initial process. But the last thing, which I think is really cool, is if this works the way I want it to, is that we do hire a person and we give that person four people and say, now do the same thing again, right? And if we can do that for three cycles, I think that that would be like the strongest engineering team that I've ever worked on, because nobody can say, I don't know how that works, because you touched all the code.
Yeah, there you go.
While we didn't merge your code, you wrote code and tried to solve every single one of these problems, and then had to verbally and vocally commit that your solution wasn't best and it was someone else, and it's on video, and we kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as a person who's worked in engineering for a long time, as I was thinking about all the problems that this development process would solve, I was like, these are all the things that are because on that triangle, startups tend to always pick fast. And if you pick fast, you end up with all these problems that I've always experienced. What happens if you don't pick fast? You end up with a different incentive structure. And yes, you go slower, but you end up with a more stable and more, at least in my head, sane engineering department that can make future decisions and understand the context in which they're being made. Which that's just almost never the case with startups.
Right. Do you guys have a website yet, or is like how where should people go to learn more and figure out what's the best way to give you feedback about, hey, I like this, or I would be an investor, or I would like to be an engineer. Like, how would you like to interact with people who are interested in that?
So we do have a website. You can go to joinnextblock.com. On there, if you are just a person interested in using the app, you can sign up for the beta. We're expecting to have a very rough launch end of Q1 next year. If you're a person who wants to be a developer in what I just described as the consensus-driven development, there's a section there for developers. You can put your email in there. And then if you want to be an advertiser, there's a section for advertisers. You can put your email in there. And cool thing about the advertisers is that one of the goals of this endeavor is that we take no real VC money. And the pitch is that if you like this so much to invest in it, you can just buy some ads. And if you actually buy our product, that's how you can fund our company. I don't need to give you equity, because if you don't want to buy ads, then you don't actually believe in the product. So we're working out some marketing material for the advertisers. and you know, how that would work, especially like before the whole thing is built. Obviously steep discounts and all that fun jazz. But joinxblock.com, if you're one of those three groups, you can give us your email and we'll be in touch. There'll be an episode on our podcast, Flirting with Bitcoin, coming out maybe tomorrow or Friday or Tuesday. I don't know when it's going out. But within the next 7 days of this recording, which will probably be after the episode goes out. So cool.
Probably after.
You should go to our podcast and find the episode where we announce next block on our podcast. The name of the episode will be called TikTok Next Block. You can't miss it. Go check that out. Listen to that. It's got a lot more detail than I could go into with you guys because it's Monza. We're just having a conversation about the app in general. And lastly, you know, on Noster, we posted on the Next Block account, which is linked to from our website. On Noster, we have a V1 of the manifesto, which I didn't read for you guys here, but I sent it to you. That kind of lays out the fight that we're in with the cartel and how we're gonna fight them. We reworked it after a lot of feedback, and there'll be a V2 going out. But if you just go follow the Next Block account on Noster, that is obviously the ideal way for you to follow us because Next Block is kind of a Noster only company. I don't think we'll have an account on Twitter or Facebook or anything. So our social media is Noster for the foreseeable future.
Burn. Oh yeah, yeah. There's you should always make like a Chaos Cartel website. Like
I already got the campaign.
Yeah, like if the Chaos Cartel had their own website and they were like they called themselves the Chaos Cartel. Yeah.
So I got the domain and I already have an idea for what's gonna be there when you go there. What I want is like a old timey newspaper kind of montage of the chaos of the Chaos Cartel spreading, right?
Uh-huh.
And it'll start with like very simple things like young upstart Jack Dorsey starts company Twitter, you know, just like the press releases of all the companies. And then it just kind of snowballs into this crime spree over the last 15 years. And then at the very end, it's like Next Block with like a cape or something. I don't know. But
that's
the crime spree is the visual that I'm really trying to drive home.
Nice.
Ian, man, thank you very much for coming on. I want to ask you a million more questions. I just want to be respectful of everyone's time.
Well, we can talk afterwards if you want.
Sure, yeah. Thank you. But I'm going to cut it. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com, or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!